south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Remember a couple of shows ago when we were discussing Spanish dunces like me, gringos and expats who have a hard time learning Spanish? Hey, there are millions of us out there. I run into those kind of expats all the time. Some have been down here 10 years or more and still can't converse properly with their cleaning ladies. Oddly enough, though, lady expats seem to do 100% better than their male counterparts. Now, why do you think that is? Are guys just stubborn and give up easily, and are women more flexible, patient, and tolerant? We'll get to that in a little bit. Of course, in the first few months you're down, almost all newbies pick up on certain Spanish language hacks. That'll get you by in the grocery store, the gas station, and the bank. But to actually have a real normal conversation with a local person in Spanish, only a very small percentage of gringos and expats living down here permanently can pull that off. Now, if you remember, I once said, maybe more than once said, my personal hallelujah moment came when I was about 5 years here in Latin America. Of course, I don't count my first almost 3 years in Costa Rica because everybody speaks English to you. You cannot learn your Spanish. Not, as you might think, by rubbing elbows with the common folks day to day. That works, though, almost every place else in Latin America off the gringo tourist trip. Certainly not in Costa Rica. So my Spanish hallelujah moment came when one day I was in an elevator with two 40-something Latinas. They spoke to each other, and I understood nearly everything they were saying. Of course, each time I moved or relocated to another Latin country, it took me a couple of months to get the hang of their accents and their slang. And the most frustrating thing for me when I was learning Spanish, well, I tried practically all of the learning options. First off, the immersion family thing, you know, when you sign on to live with a Latino family who know absolutely no English, so it has to rub off on you. Which I feel, by the way, is the second best way to learn your Spanish. The number one way, of course, is to have a non-English-speaking Latino or Latina significant other. Anyway, I tried the immersion family thing, but my stomach only lasted a couple of days. In other words, my gut bacteria weren't on board with that idea at all. Because, you know, you're living with the family, so you have to eat with them, too. The deal includes room and board. And if you don't eat their food, it's a big insult to the mother of the family. Oh, and I had a problem with the ever-disgusting bathroom situation, too. You don't want to know. Well, maybe you do. But not now. Some other time. Oh, and back in the days when I first came down, those were the days when everyone had a Walkman. Remember those? Sony produced hundreds of millions. Where are they now? In that Texas-sized plastic patch out in the ocean, maybe? Man, just thinking about that's so disgusting. Well, unfortunately for some people, and especially people in developing nations, the world is their dumpster. Then again, I remember back in the 60s and 70s up in the States, the world was our dumpster too. Until you got that $500 fine for littering. Anyway, after that immersion family fiasco, I whipped out that Walkman and tried my luck with some of those Spanish cassette tape and CD audio courses. They helped me learn Spanish vocabulary words, for a while anyway, but they just didn't stick like I wanted them to. And that method did even less for the conversational part. I found out the hard way after countless boring hours of listening to that stuff, that you have to be face-to-face with a real person, one-on-one. At least that seemed like the only way for me to get up to speed. So I ditched the tapes and CDs. And I did a little additional something that worked pretty good for me. It's how I learned most of my vocabulary, words that actually stuck with me. I bought some of those paper post-it pads, went around the house, stuck those notes everywhere, and wrote down the Spanish name for the item they were stuck to. And another thing, my disadvantage too was that I came down in the very, very early days of the internet. No streaming, no MP3 downloads, and most of the time, no connection. But now the great advantage is you can get online with Zoom or whatever and get a one-on-one in-your-face, real-live Spanish teacher. Though the problem is most people tell me it's no fun at all. Hey, I'll vouch for that. It's just boring. Going to Spanish classes, taking Spanish lessons online, or even listening to those audio courses, which involve taking tests and filling out workbooks. The thing is, you have to have patience and desire, especially since most who come down permanently are older and have not been back to school for decades. And for most of us, especially the guys, school days were not fun experiences. Hey, I know, they weren't supposed to be. They were supposed to be more like work. And who wants to get in that groove again? I don't know about you, but for me, school was no fun. For us baby boomers, it was something our parents programmed into us that it just had to be done. In fact, I can count on maybe three fingers the persons I've met in my life who actually loved school. One of those was my mother, who became a professor and all that. Figures, huh? If you loved school, that's perfect. I have to tell you, though, I've never met a guy, a male, you know, X, Y chromosome. We're still allowed to say that without being canceled, right? WTF. Anyway, every stateside male I know, when asked that question about school, would much rather have been doing something else, anything else. That means millions who got their bachelor's, master's, even PhDs and doctorates, did so in the hopes of having a good career, even though they didn't like it much. They did it because their parents always reminded them that was what they had to do to get ahead. All right, I know. Now I'm going to get all kinds of email from ladies telling me how much they love school. Though I'll bet you a C-note. There won't be one single email from a guy. Well, maybe from a guy who was captain of the football team or a kiss-ass student council president. And maybe a gay guy or two. I've known a few gays who really did like school. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Why it's so hard for gringos to learn Spanish. You know, the overwhelming majority of gringos and expats who do speak Spanish are women. And they're the ones, for example, when I ask, how's your Spanish, they'll inevitably say, not great. And then you'll see them in the market or someplace, and they'll be tucking a blue streak in Spanish to one of the locals. It seems like a gringo male thing to overestimate how much Spanish you think you know. A lot of hyperbole when you ask a guy where his Spanish rates on a 1 to 10. He'll usually give himself 2 points more than he deserves, and when you ask a lady gringa, she'll underestimate by 2 points. Which brings me to this email from a listener who believes he's discovered the fast-track gringo key to learning Spanish. Hey, everyone's looking for that magic bullet. So let's hear him out. He says he developed a system that'll let you learn pretty decent conversational Spanish in just 3 months. He says, hey, Johnny, I recently rediscovered your podcast. Glad you're still going strong. He says, you recently spoke in your podcast about learning Spanish. If you're interested, I'd like to share a system that I invented, which no one else has ever tried, yet it's very effective. With this system, I was highly functional in 3 months and was able to talk circles around my gringo compatriots, even the ones who were actively taking Spanish classes. Why does it take so long for some of us to learn? It's a teaching problem. Spanish schools and tutors all use the same underlying methodology, which is primarily academic and, more importantly, gets into complex sentences and different verb tenses much too quickly. So we learn this type of school Spanish in our classes, but when it comes to everyday use, it just doesn't transfer to street level. As to the system I've invented, there are 3 parts. In the beginning, Johnny, when I first started learning Spanish, I got a book from the library here in Mexico called Spanish in 10 Minutes a Day. It was a vocabulary book with pictures, which is about my speed. Every afternoon, I'd sit on a rooftop patio with a cerveza and read out loud from the book for up to an hour. It was simple enough, and one day I even heard a shout and looked up to see a Mexican maintenance guy looking down from the tiles on top the roof next door, waving at me. He said my Spanish was very good. And before long, I could speak Spanish in a local corner, stores and restaurants, and hold simple conversations. So I found the key is to learn vocabulary and read it out loud. But there's one big problem. The vocabulary in most of the books and courses that we come across is in European Spanish from Spain, which is very different from Spanish spoken by campesinos and the abuelitas, the grandmas in the barrio. So the question is, how can you get learning materials that have the local vocabulary? Well, it's easier than you might think. For example, throughout Latin America, there are flyers everywhere, always appearing in the mail and catalogs and people handing them out, often piled up in supermarkets and department stores too. For the early language learner, these are a gold mine of local vocabulary. They got pictures, they use very local Spanish, and they're free. And also, instead of looking for books to try to get the local Spanish down, we can do the reverse. Latinos are always trying to learn English, and it's even taught in the local schools. So we can use the same books that the local kindergarten kids use to learn English, except we just have to use them in reverse to learn Spanish. You can find those same books that kindergartners use in stationery stores and supermarkets here. I find the kindergarten level learning is just perfect for new expats. That's the vocabulary part of my system. The second part of my system is to learn pronunciation correctly, just like the locals pronounce the words. I find whatever pronunciation I learn at the very beginning will stay with me for a long time. Of course, there are a large number of websites and YouTube videos that teach the basics of pronunciation. It's a good place to start, but again, there's a problem. After teaching the basics of pronunciation correctly, most YouTube videos, even private tutors, will start to teach it all wrong. They begin using repeat after me phrases they overpronounce, over-enunciate, and speak painfully slow. Problem is, you'll never hear Spanish spoken like that in real life. If you're out and about and you're waiting for someone to speak like that, it ain't gonna happen. All right, me, Johnny, here for a second. You know, the biggest complaint I hear from gringos and expats who haven't got their Spanish down yet is that Latinos speak in machine gun fashion, rapid fire. Well, guess what? They're not going to slow down for you or me, so you're going to have to deal with it or you're never going to get your Spanish down. And Latinos learning their English say the very same thing about us. We speak rapid fire English, and we're not going to slow down for them either. And that's why so many Latinos who take English lessons throw in the towel. Then he says, Johnny, if you're looking to learn your Spanish from YouTube videos, there's tons of them out there. The trick is to find videos given by instructors who are living close to your area. Then you'll hear the common words everyone's using on the street and the accent where you're living. That leads us to the final part of my system, finding a conversation tutor. It's best to find someone who's a native speaker from your own area again, that's obvious. Then you'll hear all the words they're using in your nearby neighborhoods. So how do we find someone like that online? We can use online language exchange websites or find a neighbor who's happy to give us conversation classes for a few pesos and a Coca-Cola or lunch. High school and university students in your area make good tutors too, but if they want to have an interchange and learn some English, then don't pay them, because then you'll have a different arrangement. They'll be pumping you for English words, you'll be pumping them for Spanish, and one will gain over the other. It'll never be equal. Sometimes single mothers make excellent tutors too. But if you're an eligible male, look out. You'll want her to have a boyfriend, or she'll have other ideas. All right, me, Johnny, here again. I personally think having a single mother as a Spanish tutor does have its risks. It can be a bit dangerous. Because if she doesn't have a boyfriend, she'll have her eyes set on you as a possibility. And that could get strange. And if she does have a boyfriend, well, you remember all those times we've talked about toxic male macho jealousy? Let's put it this way. You don't want to get between a jealous Latino and his ex. Even if your tutor relationship is beyond innocent, he just might show up in the park or outdoor cafe where you and his ex or present girlfriend are doing your lessons. That could get uncomfortably tense. In fact, I know of two cases where that has happened. You know, I mentioned before how boring learning Spanish and taking Spanish lessons can be. But there are ways to really minimize, even cut out boredom completely by, for example, having your Spanish lesson over breakfast every morning at an outdoor cafe. The environment makes it a lot more palatable. Though that also means you'll get stuck forking over breakfast for the both of you, in addition to what it costs you for the lessons. Hardly a deal breaker, though. And because this is Latin America, everything's extremely negotiable. Down here, haggling is an art form. By the way, that's another reason why Latinos seem to like dealing with gringos so much, because we're not experts in the art of the haggle. We cave quickly. For example, just the other day, I was walking with two 40-something gringas in a busy city area near a Central Park, and a guy came up. Actually, two guys came up, each with a little briefcase full of turquoise, amber, and sterling silver jewelry. Yep, they eagle-eye spotted two gringos from across the park and rushed on over. They know, all right, gringa tourists are suckers for trinkets and jewelry because they always feel obligated to bring souvenirs back to the friends and family. Though t-shirts and baseball hats with funky Spanish sayings on them are great to bring home for the guys. Jewelry always works well for the ladies. And jewelry street vendors, they know if they can just get a gringa to stop and look at the stuff, chances are they'll buy a half a dozen bracelets and chains and take care of the whole female side of the family at once. So the two gringas I was with were obvious tourists, newbies who've never been off the tourist trail before. Anyway, these two newbie ladies were clueless about vendor scams. Street vendors are always trying to sell you gold or silver that ain't really gold or silver. It's plated or plateado. But how's the average person supposed to know that? Well, you look really close at the jewelry and the clasp, don't you? To see if it's stamped 14 or 18 carat, or stamped fine silver, or sterling silver, or 0.9. Then you're sure it's the real thing. Everybody knows that, right? Well, in the first world, maybe. But down here, forget about it. Unless, of course, you're in a decent jewelry store that's been in business a long time. They have to follow those guidelines, those stamping rules. However, for about $5, anyone can buy a punch online that says 14 or 18K, fine silver, 0.9, whatever. Then just buy some cheap bracelets and chains that are plateado, plated, and start stamping and punching. So my advice is, unless you really know what you're doing, never buy expensive jewelry from street vendors in Latin America. So anyway, I'm there with these two gringas. I spot the guy coming at us, and I say to the girls right away, whatever his price is, you could get it for half. And they said, tell us how. I said, you'll pick out some stuff, the guy will give you a price, and you say, no way, that's too expensive. Oh, and they'll know enough English to negotiate, too. Then the moment will come where he says, well, make me an offer. And then you offer him half. He'll look a bit insulted. He'll come back with a 10 or 15% price cut. Then you say, that's okay, I'll look around. I'm not in a rush. And then he'll drop the price another 5 or 10%. And you shake your head no and start walking away. And he'll follow you. Oh, and he'll give you all this business about how his jewelry is 3 times as expensive in the local jewelry store and all that. But you hold firm, shake your head no, and start walking. And 9 times out of 10, you'll get your price. And if you don't, it could be 20 minutes, half an hour, or even an hour later, suddenly the guy will show up wherever you are, sitting in a corner cafe, throwing rocks into a water fountain. He'll track you down and say, all right, deal. Oh, and beware of the guy that takes your offer way too quickly. He jumps right on it. Let's say you offer him half, and he comes back with a 10% cut. And you say, no, half. And he says, okay. Then something really is fishy. It's probably worth half of the half you've offered him. So beware if, when you really lowball him, he bites way too quickly. Though under one condition, he'll never come down to half. That's when he's got another customer or two standing around. He knows gringos aren't good hagglers. He doesn't want to drop his price in half in front of other customers he knows will be easy pushovers. The other thing is, and Latino street vendors know especially when it comes to gringos, we sort of feel embarrassed to really lowball them. I've seen gringos and gringas buy souvenirs and jewelry without haggling at all. They pay full price. And later, when they try to tell me what a great deal it was, sometimes I'll tell them if I'm in an ordinary mood or if they're a jerk that they paid twice as much as they had to. And they'll usually say something like, he's got to make a living too, and he looked pretty needy. And that's just one reason why tourists pay way more than they have to, because they see how poor they are, comparatively speaking. Plus, it's also true that if you really lowball them, they'll get loud and defensive. But you know, when I see that happen, it's a show. Part of the theater of the whole thing. And how do I know that? Well, that's because most of the time, an hour later, the guy will show up friendly as can be where you're having an ice cream and say, it's a deal. Now, I know some gringos and expats don't have the stomach for that kind of negotiation. They'll just pay what the guy asks. Nothing wrong with that, but you have to remember, it's a society that expects a little haggling. It's part of the game. So why not dig in and hold your ground? And of course, the idea that street vendors have a rough life, they're living from day to day, well, that's true. But remember, if they sell something at 50% off, they're still making money or they wouldn't sell it to you. They're just not making as big a margin as they would from the average clueless gringo. Remember, though, we're talking about buying nice souvenirs, not the really cheap junk that the really poor people and their very young kids will try to sell you. Stuff like pencil holders, tiny carvings, ashtrays, coin purses, and tacky nickel and dime stuff. What I'll do sometimes, and many long-term gringos and expats will do it too, a 10-year-old kid will come up, try to sell you some pencils or chocolate or something. You know these kids are really living on the edge by the way they dress and the fact that they're selling stuff for 50 cents or a buck. Well, some of us gringos and expats will just hand them the money and not take what they're selling. When you do it, they look a little surprised. Just make it clear they can sell it to the next guy. And sometimes if I'm in or near a restaurant, I'll buy him breakfast or lunch. I digressed again. Sorry about that. Back to Marcus's email, his Spanish learning method. He says, after you've hired your Spanish tutor and are starting your one-on-one conversation classes, your goal should not be to do it the standard way. I suggest just skip working on grammar or verb conjugation. You're wasting your time if you do that because you can find that information anywhere online. Instead, focus on pronunciation. Ask your tutor to show you how to pronounce vocabulary words in your catalogs, flyers, and children's textbooks. It also helps a lot to practice the pronunciation of nearby places and names on a local map. It's a great way to learn about the city and town you're in and the geographical locations of those places, too. Then he says, try to have some fun with your tutor. Joke around. Make it a game. Then it won't seem like such a drag. As you progress, you should print out some simple conversational phrases from the internet and ask your tutor how to pronounce them. You want to learn things about the town you're in and about how the locals live, so have a couple of topics handy, topics that revolve around the family members. And anytime you're discussing a new topic, make sure you practice the vocabulary and write the words down you haven't heard before. So, in the meantime, your written vocabulary word list will grow. You should practice pronunciation by reading those words out loud daily on your patio or anywhere at home. Then I guarantee within 2 or 3 weeks you'll be able to start using what you've learned around the neighborhood. It's amazing how much you can get across to a person by just using 2 or even 3 word phrases, not even whole sentences. Just using little chunks of phrases regardless of the noun, word, or adjective placement will get your point across. And soon enough you'll find you can even make a joke or two in Spanish. So, Johnny, there it is, my learning system, the one that's worked so well for me. Then he says, when you get well enough to speak with the people on the street, if you want to really get rolling and formal, you can learn grammar or take formal Spanish classes, and it'll all stick. Another great aid for all this is getting a Spanish textbook and read the same section out loud a couple of times a day, which is what I did. You heard me right. I said you read the same section out loud, the same section, so the words and pronunciations stick. With all that said, unfortunately, my Spanish learning system has one big problem. You can't sell it. It's too bad, too, because my system really does work better than any expensive course. But hopefully, at least some of your listeners will be able to put it to good use. Signing off for now, Johnny. Keep up the good work. Marcos. All right, Marcos, thanks for that. And I'm sure quite a few listeners who are Spanish dunces like me will take advantage of at least certain parts of your process. Though, I've got to tell you, Marcos, when you talk about making jokes in Spanish, I do that sometimes, but man, you have to pick your time, place, and context, because Spanish humor is a lot different than gringo humor. It rarely translates. There have been plenty of times when I've fired off a quip or a joke in Spanish and nobody picked up on it. Nothing worse than a joke that falls flat. Though on the bright side, Latinos can often spot when you're making an effort to tell a joke. They won't get it, but they'll laugh because it's the thing to do. Better than a cold, dead silence. I'm sure you've been at parties where some supposed VIP or high roller, or even some political hack, attempts a joke that's not at all funny. And the suck-ups around him and the hangers-on will laugh. Sometimes a little too hard, even if the joke absolutely stinks. And then there's always those people who laugh because other people are laughing. We all do that once in a while. Hey, nothing wrong with that. Like a good yawn, laughter's contagious and it's good for you. All right, now our COVIDiot corner. Recently, I've recognized a little problem with expats who come down here to Latin America just for vacation or boots on the ground and are going to pop back to the States right away. You know, a lot of them have in the back of their minds the idea to purchase some ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and bring it on home, because down here in Latin America, every drugstore has it and you don't need a prescription. Now, I got into a little discussion with Captain Mango the other day, talking about that very subject. Because, you see, it seems a lot of gringos and expats have cold feet, or just feel funny, walking into a drugstore asking for something like that, especially without a prescription. Here's something you have to know about drugstores here in Latin America. Now, you've heard me say before, most people here do not have healthcare insurance. It's only 5, at most 10% of the population, and that's stretching it. However, everyone who does have some kind of health plan, they get some coverage, sometimes even 100% coverage, of pharmaceutical medicine. But the catch is, insurance companies won't pay for any medicine unless a prescription's involved. So when you walk into the average drugstore, you'll notice in the larger stores, there's an express checkout line and a checkout line for people with healthcare insurance. And man, I'll tell you, if you've got healthcare insurance and you've got a prescription and you walk into the pharmacy, you might as well plan on sitting around for a half hour at least, because they'll have to verify your insurance card, call the insurance company, make sure you're in good standing and your policy hasn't lapsed, because that's the number one problem with healthcare insurance here in Latin America. Turns out, just because you have an insurance card doesn't mean you're actually insured. I see it all the time. People walk into the hospital emergency room or go to the pharmacist, whip out that insurance card, only to find out they're behind a couple of payments and thus their insurance has lapsed. It's a huge problem. Details, details. That's why I always recommend gringos and expats with healthcare policies pay a year at a time. And when you do that, you get a 10 or even 20% discount. Don't get on the pay-by-the-month plan, because chances are you won't get a teaser email from the insurance company like you would in the States. You don't want to find out when you have to use it that you're 15 days late on the payment. Hey, you know how insurance companies are. If you're one day behind, you're not covered. But back to ivermectin. So my advice to you gringos and expats coming down to Latin America for a short term, a couple of weeks, a month, whatever, and you want to get some ivermectin and some hydroxychloroquine, all you have to do is go on the net and take a picture of the box that it comes in, or just the name and the dosage. You know the dosage, right? Just go into the pharmacy, whether you speak Spanish or not, show them the name or a picture of the stuff and say, por favor, una caja. One box of each, please. Though, oddly enough, since this is Latin America, when you go into a pharmacy, you can actually buy single pills. Of course, they'll be individually sealed in a blister, but you can buy them individually or a whole blister pack, 6 or 10, or a whole box that's got any number of blister packs in it. Now, why in the world would someone buy individual, let's say, ampicillins or tetracyclines or amoxicillin tabs? Well, that's because here in Latin America, Latinos are notorious for taking pills just until the symptoms subside. In other words, when it comes to taking a prescribed course of pills, Many Latinos won't buy the whole prescription, just enough for a couple days. To see how it goes, they'll buy maybe a half or a quarter of the necessary amount. They'll take them, and if the symptoms go away or die down fairly quickly, they won't get the rest of the prescription. So what's that about? Well, it's all about the money. Because even though common medicines down here are vastly cheaper than up in the States, if, let's say, a course of cephalosporin costs 10 bucks down here and 50 or 60 bucks up by you, since the average American makes 6 to 10 times as much as the average Latino, 10 bucks to them could be like 100 bucks is to us. So normally, down here anyway, if you buy a box of ivermectin, a box, it'll have maybe 5 blister packs in it. That means if you buy an entire box of ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, there'll be way more than the recommended 5 daily dose treatment protocol. In fact, I mentioned just a couple of weeks ago, I helped a gringa get both those items at a local pharmacy. I think I mentioned it. Anyway, she bought a box of ivermectin and a box of hydroxychloroquine. Each had a number of blister strips in it. Turns out with just those two boxes, she had enough for 7 complete treatments. In other words, good for 7 COVIDiot victims to be taken, of course, at the very onset of the symptoms. Initial symptom, usually a sore, raspy throat. Then comes fever and fatigue. You don't wait. You take the stuff within the first day or two. And if you do, it's almost a guarantee you'll never end up in the hospital. Look up the dats and stats. You'll see it's true. So anyway, when she went home, she put them in her clear plastic makeup bag in the stowed luggage. And she went through 2 plane changes, 2 layovers, and got them home to New Jersey, no problem at all. So then what might happen if Customs or TSA pulls them out of your luggage? Well, unless you make a big scene and start a fight over it, they'll either confiscate them, case closed, or let you go through with them. Oh, and what excuse was she going to use if they did quiz her? There's always that possibility, right? She says, I won't lie. I'll tell them I went to the pharmacy and asked them what I should take if I get those flu-like symptoms that are going around. Hey, I like it. Now, that's one smart gringa. Of course, if she wanted to be a little less diplomatic, if TSA quizzed her, she might have said, oh, so you want to know about this medicine? Well, I'm performing a public service. I understand most of you TSA guys need to be dewormed. Sounds right to me. So anyway, if you're coming down to Latin America, don't let anybody tell you that you need a prescription. You don't. Though, as I said earlier, there is a line for people who have prescriptions because a percentage of those folks will be getting reimbursed from their insurance companies. And to get them to cover it, there has to be a legit prescription from a legit doc. Oh, and by the way, if you can't come up with a good picture of a box of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you a photo.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.